What is the turning point when we choked by Krishna or a Christ?
To rescue us from that.
From that delusion.
That delusion. It is first the knowledge of how to make your intellect steady.
That is the teacher.
First of all, the knowledge, yes, you might say that the knowledge comes from the teacher, therefore you should know that there is a state of steadiness of the will, steadiness of intelligence, buddhi. Buddhi is a word which is translated as intelligence, which is will, therefore it's intelligent will. Both are together, both will and intelligence should be fixed. And that can happen only when you are free from desire. So long as you are filled with desires, the intellect can never become fixed. Therefore, Sri Krishna says that as long as you are in the field of action, which is motivated by desire, never expect that you will be free from all grief and all kinds of bahushaka, all vibrat. Is that clear? So now comes the real karma yoga. This is the starting point of karma yoga. In which it is said, karmanyeva adhikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana ma karma phala etuhu bhuhu ma de sangaha astu akarmani. Very often it is stated as if it is the final term of the Bhagavad Gita. But this is the first statement of the Gita's Karma Yoga, the starting point of the Karma Yoga, in which he says that you have a right to action alone. Do action, but disconnect action from its tendency to the enjoyment of the fruits of action. Do not do an action with a desire to enjoy the fruits. This is also the answer to Arjuna's question where he was saying, why should I fight and kill and then enjoy the fruits of that battle? Which fruits will be blood splattered? So Sri Krishna's answer indirectly is that if you do an action, not because you are going to enjoy this or enjoy that. I am not saying you fight because you will have better enjoyment, not this kind of enjoyment, not at all. Be free completely from any desire for enjoyment. And yet, you have no right to the fruits even if you seek by buddhi. You see the whole movement of the world. Fruits are never in your hands. And when you try to do an action for the sake of the fruits, for the sake of enjoyment of fruits, you will be disappointed because it is not according to your desire. But normally when you do not have desire for fruits of action, you plunge into inaction. Therefore the last phrase is, ma de sangaha astu akarmani. Do not therefore fall into inaction. Therefore act without desire for the fruits of action. Let desire for the fruits of action be not the motive of your action. At the same time, do not fall into inaction. In other words, karma yoga consists of what? Act. Act with a steady consciousness. Buddhi which is fixed in the indestructible reality, and buddhi which is able to see everything in equal consciousness, equality. And normal tendency is that in that state you are likely to fall into inaction. Do not fall into inaction. These are the basic statements of the karma yoga of the Gita. Now in the next sentence, he elucidates this. Yogastaha kuru karmani Sangam tyaktva dhananjaya siddhi asiddhyoho samo bhutva samatvam yoga uchyate. Yogastha Kuru Karmani. Do actions, but stating yourself, standing yourself in the midst of yoga, where your intelligence is steady. Sangam Tyaktva, give up all attachments. All attachments. Siddhi Asiddhi, success or failure, to become equal to both. And it is that state which is the sense of yoga. The real essence of karma yoga is samatva. Now you will see this kind of karma yoga in which the perception of reality is the basis. Perception of reality is knowledge. This yoga is such a yoga that cannot be performed without junction with knowledge. Sri Krishna's karma yoga is a synthetic yoga which is based upon knowledge. Without knowledge you cannot do this yoga. And that is the speciality of this karma yoga. This karma yoga is not a yoga of beauty in which you can do beauty without knowledge. It is not a karma yoga of the desire which enjoys into fruits in which you need not have knowledge. And yet you can have fruits of action and enjoy the fruits. This yoga, is a karma yoga because it insists upon action. It says that this action will lead you to the knowledge. It also says that the real yoga can be performed only when you are stationed in knowledge. So, karma yoga is a kind of a path which leads you to knowledge. That also will come later on that statement, that all action ultimately ends in knowledge. This is the karma yoga by performing which you will attain to knowledge and you will be able to do karma yoga only when you are really settled in knowledge. Settled in knowledge gives you two criteria, the state of knowledge of the one and state of equilibrium. These two cannot come about without the state of knowledge. And yet you act. Therefore these two sentences, as if these two verses, are the crux of the karma yoga, which will be further expounded in the later chapters. But in this chapter, the karma yoga is stationed on the point where desireless action is imposed, in which equality and perception of oneness are expounded. In the third chapter, a further enunciation will come that when you do karma as a sacrifice, yajna. The whole concept of yajna comes in the third chapter. There is a further enunciation of karma yoga. In the fourth chapter, karma yoga is further enunciated by which you come to do karma which is divyam karma, which rises to the divine action. So there are three steps of the karma yoga. In the second chapter, you are only told to do action without desire for the fruits of action. In the third chapter, we are told a further secret of karma yoga, where karma is done as a sacrifice to the Lord. Here the idea of a karma as an offering to the Lord is not expounded as yet. You simply do action and be samatvam, have samatvam. In the third chapter we are further told the secret of karma, and karma is a sacrifice in which your relationship with the Lord is established. It's a deeper kind of karma yoga. And then having done it, you will attain to the perfection of karma yoga, which comes when you yourself do divyam karma. You no more do the human action, you do the divyam karma. So these are the three steps of karma yoga. So next time we shall take up it, we shall continue from here. We have just started the exposition of karma yoga. This chapter is entitled Sankhya Yoga. Sankhya means Jnana Yoga, Yoga means Karma Yoga. Therefore, this chapter is centered on Jnana Yoga and Karma Yoga. And the center of this chapter is Buddhi. By the power of Buddhi, you can enter into Jnana Yoga. By the power of Buddhi, you can enter into Karma Yoga. The first part of the second chapter is devoted to the Buddhi as applied in Jnana Yoga. And it is said that by applying Buddhi, you understand and realize what is permanent, eternal. And when you know what is eternal, you get freedom from grief. You get liberated. Moksha. But there is the application of Buddhi in such a way that even if you do action, you still get free from grief and you get liberation. And that is what we have been now centered upon. And the first statement of Karma Yoga is that to action alone you have the right and not to its fruits. And do not do actions for the sake of the enjoyment of fruits. This is where we had reached last time. We had also added two more sentences. That if you can do an action in a state of equality, then you have the measure that you are really in Karma Yoga. Do karma, do action, but have a state of equality. That will be the standard. You will be able to judge whether you are doing Karma Yoga or not. I added that this is where the second chapter ends as far as Karma Yoga is concerned. With the third chapter, we are told a new secret of Karma Yoga. Namely, that when you can do yoga or karma by sacrificing the work, the concept of yajna is emphasized in the third chapter. And third chapter is specially designed for Karma Yoga alone. This chapter is both Sankhya and Yoga, Jnana Yoga and Karma Yoga. The third chapter is centrally concentrated upon Karma Yoga. And the secret that is revealed in the third chapter is that when you do the karma, you should do it as a sacrifice. And the fourth chapter goes further in Karma Yoga. And although it is entitled Jnana Yoga, we shall see why, but it still continues the definition of Karma Yoga. And the secret that is told in the fourth chapter is that when you continue action with the state of equality and as a sacrifice, then in due course, you are elevated to such an extent that your action is not only action for the divine, but your action itself becomes divine's work. Divyam karma becomes divine's own work, not your work for the divine, but divine himself acting through you, and divine's own action passes through you. That is the culmination of Karma Yoga. But that comes in the fourth chapter. At this stage, it is good if we can ask ourselves, why should Karma Yoga be called Yoga? In other words, what is the definition of yoga?
And what is the precise distinction between karma yoga, jnana yoga, bhakti yoga? Every yoga must have three aspects. There is an object of yoga. There is an instrument by which yoga is done. And there is the method of yoga, the process of yoga. So, you cannot say that you have studied yoga unless you can define very clearly for any yoga unless you can answer these three questions. Why is karma yoga karma yoga? Why is it so called? So, you must know what is the object of karma yoga. What is the instrument by which you are conducting karma yoga and what is the method of doing it. So, let us answer these three questions. Because we are now studying the Bhagavad Gita not as merely outside students, but as somewhat more competent students, so that we have a Shastric knowledge, a scientific knowledge, much more intimate knowledge of the book itself. The object of Karma Yoga is to be able to do Divine's work. That is the object. To arrive at such a state that you are no more doing human works. All our works are at present human. To raise ourselves to a stage where Divine work passes through us and we become accomplished in Divine work, manifesting the Divine's work. That is the object of Karma Yoga. The instrument that is chosen for this yoga is neither intellect nor emotion. Intellect is a chosen instrument of Jnana Yoga. The instrument chosen for Bhakti Yoga is emotion. But the instrument chosen for Karma Yoga is will. But since this Karma Yoga is an integral Karma Yoga, the Karma Yoga of the Bhagavad Gita is not merely a Karma Yoga, but an integral Karma Yoga. Therefore, although predominance is of will, intellect is also an instrument. Emotion is also an instrument. And will is the chosen, predominant instrument. But ultimately you will find that by using that instrument, gradually you will also bring into picture the intellect and emotion. So that ultimately all the three are united and then it becomes an integral karma yoga. So, these are the three instruments of integral karma yoga. Although, karma yoga as such has its own emphasis on will. That is the instrument. Now, what is the method? The method of karma yoga is to purify the will. Purification is always the first starting point of any method of yoga, depending upon the instrument. If Jnana Yoga is the method, is the instrument, then intellect is to be purified. In the case of Bhakti Yoga, emotion is to be purified. In the case of Karma Yoga, will is purified. So the emphasis falls upon the purification. In every yoga, there are three basic processes. Purification, concentration, and renunciation. No yoga can be accomplished without these three. There has to be a purification. There has to be concentration. And there has to be renunciation. Now, in the case of Karma Yoga, There is first the purification of the will, and you will see in this chapter when we read now for the second chapter and third chapter particularly, how much emphasis is laid upon purification. Then there is concentration. Why Sri Krishna emphasizes so much in the second chapter on the concentration of buddhi? And by buddhi is meant not only intellect, but intellect that guides the will. That is the meaning of the word buddhi. So, there is an emphasis upon concentration of the will. He says that vyavasayatmaka buddhi, the buddhi which is engaged, which is concentrated. The entire description of Sita Pragya, which takes a large portion of the closing chapter, closing part of the chapter 2, is devoted to Sthita Pragya. So Sthita Pragya, one whose Pragya is Sthita, one whose intelligent will is stable, is concentrated. So concentration is also a part of Karma Yoga. Concentration of will. That is why the word that is used is Yuktaha, one whose will is concentrated. So there is a great emphasis upon the purification. Then there is emphasis upon the concentration of the will. And then there is a lot of discussion on the subject of renunciation, Tyaga, Sannyasa. You will find these two words often coming in these 3-4 chapters. It is a question of renunciation. Renunciation has been so much misunderstood in our country over years that whenever we speak of renunciation, it is like throwing the baby with the bath. Instead of renouncing the right thing, we renounce wrongly. And even that which is not to be renounced is renounced. And that is why there is a big problem. In fact, one of the main problems of the Bhagavad Gita is centered upon this concept of renunciation. And it starts right from the beginning. When Arjuna raises the question in the very first chapter, he starts by saying, I want to renounce. It is better that I go on begging rather than killing my grandfather and my teacher. He also said, I do not desire any kingdom, I do not desire any happiness. Nakankshe rajyam, nakankshe sukam. It's a bold statement of renunciation. I renounce kingdom, I renounce sukam. So much of the discussion, the whole Bhagavad Gita is on the subject of renunciation. And two words prominently come are sannyasa and tyaga. And distinctions are made between sannyasa and tyaga. And ultimately it is said that both the words basically should mean the same, but they have come to mean different things. Actually there should be no difference between the two words, but lot of discussion has taken place in India. And a sannyasin is one who renounces everything. Tyaga is supposed to be is like a swan which distinguishes between milk and water when both are mixed together. And therefore renounces the water but drinks the milk. Now that is why Sri Krishna ultimately says that you should have tyaga, but not sannyasa in the sense in which it is come to be used. But the real sannyasa is tyaga. Sannyasa actually means set aside. That is the literal meaning. Set aside. Sannyasa. Set aside all. That is sannyasa. Tyaga also means giving up. So, in the Gita, Sri Krishna says you have to do renunciation, but the right type of renunciation. This karma yoga demands renunciation, but right type of renunciation. Now, if you study, therefore, the first four chapters of the Gita from this point of view, all the four chapters will become crystal clear. There is an emphasis upon purification, emphasis upon concentration, and the emphasis upon renunciation. By the triple powers of these three, you will ascend the path of karma yoga. But these are three first steps of the methods. Purification, renunciation, and concentration. As a result of these three processes, in the middle steps of the karma yoga, are involved two very important elements. One is the knowledge by which the whole karma is understood, the whole movement of karma. What is karma? Yes, Sri Krishna will say in the Bhagavad Gita, what is karma, what is non-karma, akarma, and what is vikarma, what is wrong action? Even the wisest find it difficult to answer. Therefore, in the second portion of the Bhagavad Gita, in the karma yoga, you will find a lot of light on this subject. What is karma? What is the origin of karma? What is the middle of karma? What is the end of karma? This is one part. Second part of this is the state of equality and annihilation of the ego. These are the two aspects on which a great emphasis falls in these first four chapters, actually three chapters. Second, third and fourth chapters, they deal with these problems. What is equality? Just as with regard to renunciation, there is a lot of confusion. Similarly, in regard to equality, there is a lot of confusion. What is equality? And if you read the Bhagavad Gita quite closely, you will find that there are great subtleties. Although all the time we say, man of man, you take them as equal. Success, failure, you take them as equal. What does it really mean? And what are the states through which you pass? There are three states. Since I am talking of the method, I am analyzing this aspect of the states through which you pass when you move in the path of equality. Just as you begin to have more and more knowledge of karma, the beginning, the middle and the end, similarly you begin to understand what is equality. And you cannot understand equality unless you pass through three states. First is the state of endurance. This is called in Sanskrit titiksha. Endurance. Whatever comes on you, you endure quietly. Whether it is shitoshna, whether it is cold or whether it is good luck or bad luck, good fortune or misfortune, success or failure, whether it is good piece of good that you get in reward or a piece of gold you may get in reward, you should be able to endure and you should have no personal reaction to it. This is one of the great states that you achieve by endurance. As yet you are not asked to understand why should there be these opposites at all in the world. this knowledge will come later on. But while you are doing karma yoga, first you should be able to endure quietly. So it says, whenever anything happens to you, you endure. In other words, you should have a will which is capable of not being troubled by whatever happens. Under every situation, you remain completely quiet. That is the first. Our normal thing is immediately to react favorably or unfavorably. But to react very, very quietly and to enter into great quiet, the knowledge as to why you should be very quiet will come later on. Because that is a secret. The real reason why you should be quiet is in this world, nothing happens without a very special reason. Nothing happens, whether good fortune or misfortune. Nothing happens in the world unless it is a part of a big design, which the divine himself is the author. This is the real reason. We may not like what is happening. And we may not even know what is the divine's design. And also we do not know whether what has happened is the last word. Normally when we react to an action, we feel as it is as if the end of the world. A misfortune has come. And we don't see that it is some great fortune in the making. That also we don't see. I fail in the examination now, and I don't see that this failure is a door opening to something unexpected. A great fortune will open out of my failure. Now this I don't normally see, and therefore I react now, and I don't become quiet. I do not try to understand. I don't have the patience, and therefore even the good fortune which is going to come out of it, I do not know how to handle this misfortune properly, and I even spoil a good fortune which is likely to come. That is why, but this is aspect of knowledge. But in the beginning, what Sri Krishna says that you should be completely equal-minded. And he even says that whether good things happen or bad things happen, first thing is samekritva. Be absolutely equal-minded. Do not be troubled. That is called sthita buddhi. The buddhi which is absolutely sthira, stable. Now, second stage is, you begin to have the knowledge of the events in the world. Why events happen? And when you really know the happening of the events, the secret of the happenings of the events, then you really begin to feel as that your state of consciousness finds that both actually are good fortune. What you are calling ill fortune and what you are calling good fortune, both the judgments were wrong. Your so-called good fortune was not good fortune in the sense in which it is really good fortune. It was not ill fortune in the sense in which you were taking it to be ill fortune. You will really realize that every event that happens is fundamentally in the making. It is not as if it is final. It is in the making. It is a process of learning. In simpler terms, we say that all difficulties are opportunities. And this statement is a very valid statement. When you really understand the world, you find that every situation is an opportunity. And therefore, if anything happens, you can always turn it if you rightly understand it, then you will find that you just have to look at it in the right manner. The moment you look in the right manner, it will turn into the right consequence. If you don't do it, it will get complicated, more and more complicated. And that is what we normally do. We get things more and more complicated. But if you really remain quiet, then you will try to understand. And the knowledge will be so, that is the measure of knowledge. If after getting the knowledge, your state becomes really equal automatically, then means that you have now the right knowledge. So this is called the stage of the sage. The first is called the stage of the stoic. A stoic is one who can endure with will. A sage is one who looks upon all events with equal mind, with knowledge that everything has a design, and if you know the purpose of it, then you really become completely equal, and you know also how to deal with it rightly. In the first stage, you do not know how to deal with it. There's a limitation of the first stage. You simply endure. But you do not have as yet the knowledge as to how to deal with a situation. But in the second stage, when the knowledge comes, you know how to deal with it. In the third stage, is that anything that happens, you learn how to resign it in the hands of God. This requires a higher development. It's a resignation. But here again, resignation can be quite wrong kind of resignation. We do not really resign. We go on thinking, but you say, Bhagavan kya hai? But we still go on planning, plotting, conspirating. We go on doing our all activities. But we use an epithet all the time, Bhagavan kya hai? But that is not the real resignation. Real resignation is really to go into the inner chamber of the heart. Very, very quiet. Therefore, it is more difficult than even jnana. To go into the very, your heart should be torn as it were. The walls of the heart should be torn. You should be able to go into the chamber of heart. Where the divine is seated. And where he is awaiting you. Because, as Sri Aurobindo says, just as you are in search of God, God is in a greater passion to receive you and to give all himself to you. So he is awaiting your call. And when you go to him, you say, here is my fate today. This is what has happened to me. This is where the situation is. I put everything in your hands. And I will do nothing. Let your will be done. Now there should be such a tremendous meeting with the divine. What we call trust or faith is a minor term. But this is the meaning, at least minimum, that you should have trust. That when you have put in his hands, be sure, you have put in the hands of the omnipotent. And he will do it. You do nothing absolutely. Absolutely nothing. That is a real resignation. You resign it to the divine's will, but after putting the whole thing into the divine's hands, that what you should do. Do not have the illusion that without putting everything in his hands, still he will do it. You have to take the trouble of going to the divine, open the chamber, meet him, and put in his hands. And even if you do not see him, imagine that he is, because he really is. And say, you are the omnipotent, I put the whole thing, and I will do nothing you do it in the best possible manner. Or even if you still cannot remain without doing something, because we are so active in our consciousness, you still say, let my action succeed only if you so will it. Let it fail if you so will it. I am only doing it because I can't do without it. But I really want only your will to be done. This is resignation. Then everything is equal. It gives you all the strength of receiving all the impacts of the world as they come upon you. This is the method. It's the second step of the method. So the knowledge as to what is karma, what is akarma, what is vikarma. Secondly, tidiksha. Then the knowledge of events. And thirdly, resignation. And then, when all this happens, there is one important instrument in our will, which is always present, and that is aham karta asmi. I am the doer. This is one fundamental aspect of our psychology. I am the doer. But when your knowledge of what is karma, what is the beginning, what is the middle, what is the end, when you have known this, when you have endured, when you have known the eventology, when you have resigned, then this idea, I am the doer, will be transformed. I, the doer, will be annihilated, particularly when you have resigned to the divine's will. Now you are not doing anything. It is the divine which is doing. Then, you will really know that you are not the doer. It is the divine who is doing. So, ego will be annihilated. So, this is the second stage of our method. Now comes the third stage of this method, which is the most difficult stage. Very often when we resign everything to the divine, and you really do nothing at all, there is a tendency to fall into such a quietude that even when the divine wants to do something, you prevent it. There is so much of silence that when the divine wants to use your instrument, they have become so still that they are incapable of carrying out the operation of the divine. Therefore, in order that divine's will may pass through you, your instruments, body, life and mind, have to be so trained that your instruments are not found to be still. If Arjuna has to shoot the arrow, it is not as if the hand should say that now they are so still that now the hands will not move. Therefore, exercise of the instruments have to be trained in such a manner that at the right time, the right action proceeds. It is like a good writer who does not keep a good fountain pen. And when he starts writing, there is no ink in it, or the nib is very weak and cannot take the flow. A karma yogin is one who keeps all his instruments in perfect order. If he is an orator, he keeps his throat perfectly well, his language perfectly articulate, his sense of emphasis falling at the right point, at the right moment, in the right manner. These are his instruments, and his instruments must be perfected. All his exercise he has to do, so that when the divine finds in you the instrument must be perfect. Now, this is
perhaps the most difficult part of Karma Yoga. As compared to this process, the other two are simpler, although they also are sufficiently difficult. But this is the most difficult. There are so many instruments, so many elements in us. In fact, this aspect is dealt with by in the Gita, in the last six chapters of the Gita. The last six chapters of the Gita are not sufficiently understood, even by great learned people, as to what is the significance of these last six chapters. In the last six chapters, Sri Krishna says, in detail, what are the instruments of action? What are the three gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas, which are moving in us? What are the different kinds of the states of mind in sattva, rajas and tamas? What are the different kinds of efforts, sattva, rajas and tamas? What are the kinds of shraddha, the faith? Again, sattva, rajas, tamas. What is tapasya? Again, sattva, rajas, tamas. What is dana? Again, sattva, rajas, tamas. What is the yajna, which is sattva, rajas, tamas? He describes in detail so that the whole instrumentality, all the elements in the instrument are analyzed. Very briefly, you might almost say, what is this repetition all the time? In everything, Sri Krishna says, sattva is this, rajas is this, tamas is this. But why this? Because in every aspect, our instrument should be so perfected. You must know that this is tamas, this is rajas, this is sattva. And then you can know that even sattva is not the highest. As Sri Krishna speaks of Trigunatita, you should be able to go beyond the three gunas. It is only when you perfect your sattva consciousness that you can go beyond. And then in that state, your instruments are so perfected that the divine will go straight like a shot without any obstruction. These last six chapters therefore culminate. In fact, they cannot be obtained. This whole thing cannot be obtained unless jnana, karma, bhakti, all are united. But united for what purpose? For the sake of action. The whole emphasis on the Bhagavad Gita is action is better than inaction. And you should never allow inaction. That is the basic emphasis. And therefore, when you unite karma, bhakti, jnana, whatever their respective boons and their results, all of them have to be utilized so that ultimately the divine will manifests. The one sentence that Sri Krishna had told Arjuna at the beginning, why are you gripped by this depression? Stand up and fight. This is a basic proposition. But fight divinely. Stand up like a divine warrior. Not like a feeble, coward individual who wants to run away, whose mind is confused, who is egoistic, calculating this, calculating that. Not like that. Be a warrior, but a divine warrior. And fight vigorously like an instrument, such an instrument that you don't fight at all. It is the divine who fights. It is the divine who shoots, not you. This is the perfection. So Karma Yoga, now we can conclude again, has three aspects. The object is to be able to manifest the divine action. That is the object. The instrument is the will, But since this karma yoga is an integral yoga, the will is combined with knowledge and emotion, but with a greater emphasis upon will. And the method is first purification of the will, concentration of the will, renunciation of the right kind. This is the minimum. In the second stage, the knowledge of what is vikarma, akarma, vikarma. Then, endurance, by which a true equality is achieved in enduring everything. Secondly, knowledge of eventology, that in all events there is a divine will, that knowledge, so that you become equal by luminous knowledge. You know, it's not merely shraddha or trust that everything is in the hands of God. You really know. And then resign. You are able to go to the chamber of God, offer everything, and say to the divine, you act. And really yourself not act. Or even if you act, you say to the divine, I am only acting because I am obliged to act. This is my habit. But please give me failure if it is not according to your will. Give success to it if it is your will. Or do something else which I am not even thinking of. All is welcome if it comes from you. This is the second process, middle process. And the highest process is perfection of all instruments in such a manner that ultimately you are able to transcend even the sattva in every movement, every fiber of the being. And ultimately, the divine will can manifest Trigunatita. The action of the divine is neither sattvic, nor rajasic, nor tamasic. The divine action is another quality altogether. It is Sachidananda. There is neither sattva, rajas, tamas, it is Sachidananda. There is a pure being, pure consciousness, pure will, pure delight. It is that action should be able to manifest itself in you. This is the highest karma yoga as given in the Gita. I am speaking out all this in greater length because the trend of the argument, even while doing the second chapter, we should know towards what the whole argument is moving. Therefore, I have brought even the last six chapters, even at this stage, so that we know that ultimately Sri Krishna is preparing Arjuna for that culmination. It is little by little, because Sri Krishna is a good teacher who doesn't pour everything at one stage. But little by little he reveals, so that he is prepared for the final secrets. So now we come back as to where we are now. We are just at the beginning of the Karma Yoga, in which emphasis now falls first upon purification, concentration and renunciation. Now where do we see here these three elements? We see here because Sri Krishna says that our will is normally impure because of desire. There is a distinction which is made here between will and desire. The second and third chapters are given to this great distinction. The will is not to be excited. The will is not to be destroyed, because that is the instrument. If you have to fight, you must have the will to fight. So will is not to be destroyed. But this will is normally vitiated, impurified by the presence of desire. Now desire also looks like a will. if you examine the psychology of desire, you find in desire there is always this element of will. Desire impels you. All will is force applied and transformed into action so as to produce a result. This is the meaning of will. It's a force transformed into an action applied to produce a result. This is the basic meaning of will. Now, this will in us normally is vitiated. It is in a state of impurity. That impure will is called desire. Now, what are the elements of this impurity?
We are
never a force, pure and simple. We are a bundle of a force which is resisted by inertia. Our force is rajas. Our force is not the will, which is called real will, which is only a force of action. Ours is rajas, there is a fever effect. That fever is again contradictory in us with idleness, sloth, negligence. At the same time, there is a force of action, but it is contradicted because in us there is this tamas all the time. You cannot do any, in our psychology, it is impossible that sattva, rajas and tamas do not obtain together in different proportions. So, normally our action is rajasic, but rajas, which is greatly contradicted by tamas, some kind of inertia. We want to do something, but we do not want to do the whole thing. You will see, this is one of the greatest problems of human life, that even when we want to do something, we don't want to do the whole thing. At a certain stage, you say, I will go so far and no more. That will happen. Or, this is my function, not my function. That is not my function. Now somebody else must take it up. I have done all that I can. Somebody else must take it up. Or there is sattva, which comes with his knowledge and gives you a balm of quietude. When you want to do action, there is a balm of quietude which helps you be quiet, don't be feverish. It gives you lots of questioning. Are you really doing the right thing? Are you really doing the wrong thing? What will be the consequence of it? What will be the consequence of that? So, sattva, although it is intelligent, it gives you knowledge, but it also stops the force of action. Now, these are impurities of our will. So, the will which is impurified by sattva, rajas and tamas becomes desire. This is one aspect of desire. The second aspect of desire is that there is an object, a result. As I told you, will is a force applied to action to produce a result. But here, one becomes more exclusively turned to result, producing of result, and not so much careful in applying the force, not so much careful in really doing the action. But there is a tremendous vivacity to produce the result now, here, now, and wanting it right now. That is desire. The will to produce a result, nothing wrong about it. All action is nothing but will or force applied to action so as to produce a result. But we are so weak that we do not give so much of importance of force. We don't gather enough force, first of all. We don't really plan action properly. But we want to do something, immediately we want to reap the results. So there is a disproportionate relationship between force, action and results. In other words, our entire emphasis falls actually upon enjoyment of results. Our force of will is a little. Action is imperfect. But as far as tendency to enjoy the result is quick. And even when that result comes, you find that, oh, this is not what I wanted. I forgot what I really wanted. I wanted something else. So even that we are not sure. Such is the condition. This is the psychology of desire. Desire is basically a tendency to enjoy the fruits of action about which we are not sure and which we are not going to satisfy with, and in regard to which the force is very little and the action is hardly planned properly or hardly adequate for producing the result that is desired. This is the psychology of desire. All of us are subject to this desire. Apart from sattva-rajas and tamas, this is another strain in our desire. Third is that in every desire and every action, there is a very powerful psychological strain in which I put myself in the center. In every desire, there is a central focus, you might say, a central knot. I put myself in the center without knowing who I am, first of all, but there is an idea, a vague idea, I. If you really examine what is I, it will be quite evaporative. But without, we don't do that. We simply have an idea of an I. And that I is functioning in a very peculiar manner. It is self. I is a self-contradiction. I is a finite, which does not want to remain infinite, but which does not want to become infinite either. It's a self-contradiction. The finite that does not want to remain what it is and does not want to be another than what it is. At the same time, if you really examine your psychology of the I, you will always find it does not want to remain what it is. It wants to enlarge itself, wants to bigger. And yet, anything that pokes it and says, be become, it resists it. I want to remain myself. I am I. This is the psychology of the I. That I want to be I, not only that, but I want to be the center of action. This is another aspect of our desire. I want to be the center of it. That is to say, for me, the whole action is moving on in the world in which I am putting what I say my action, without realizing that, look, when there is a whole universe and action is going on, you are putting this one, how can you be center? It is obvious you cannot be center, but ignorantly, I want to be the center of it. And I want to say that everything ultimately must abide by my action. And ultimately, my point should be the central point. I should make the central contribution. My name, Napoleon feels that my name in history should go down in such a way that the whole world was remade by Napoleon. Which is impossible. But that is his ambition, that is his idea. This centrality is another weakness in the whole action. And third, when the result is produced, I must be the enjoyer of it. So this I has this threefold characteristic. It wants to be itself and yet not to be itself. It wants to be the center and it wants to enjoy itself. If possible, the only sole enjoyer, if possible, but without sole enjoyer, or if not, mine should be the lion's share. This is its fundamental urge. Now, this is a threefold state of our egoistic consciousness. Now, you can see how far it is from the force applied to action to produce a result. It is not as if production of a result or the decision to produce a result is anything wrong about it. But because my preponderant wish is to enjoy the fruit of action, therefore Sri Krishna says, let not the enjoyment of the fruit of action be your motive. That is the purification. Let my desire, kama. Kama is the basic thing, and kama we have now analyzed it quite well. This kama has this fundamental tendency to enjoy the fruits of action as soon as possible. And that vitiates the whole action. Therefore, Sri Krishna says, you should purify yourself in such a way that first remedy is do not go straight to the fruits of action. And let not the enjoyment of fruits of action be your motive. That is the purification. Second element of purification is vigata jvaraha. That is one of the sentences you will find in this chapter, which is a very important statement. Vigata jvaraha. Yudhyasva vigata jvaraha. You fight, but where there is no jvara, there is no fever. There is no impatience. There is no disappointment. There is no urgency of enjoying the fruits of action. Even before the fruit is produced, you want to enjoy it. This jvara is a special sign of desire. Jvara makes you impatient and wants to enjoy as soon as possible, immediately on the spot. You can't wait. So this is the second purification, vigata jvaraha. Give up all the jvara. There should be no fever in action. And the third is, there should be no confusion. They purify your movement from all confusion. These are the three basic purifications you have to do. First is clutching, trying to clutch at the result. Secondly, feverishly pursue it. And thirdly, to do it confusedly. These are the three impurities. And Sri Krishna says in different verses how you can purify. These are to be purified. Give up all.
Can you tell us a little more on the confusion, the purification of confusion? What is the method of that?
Every desire is accompanied by an idea of what you want. And this idea, if you really analyze it, you will find there is so much of obscurity. If you really straight look, what do I really want? You will find different concepts of what you want. And many of these trends are self-contradictory. Just take the example of Arjuna's argument. It is an example of confusion. What is the confusion in the argument that Arjuna puts forward? We just examine it now more carefully. He starts by saying, I do not want kingdom, I do not want enjoyment. Very fine. Does it therefore follow that I will not fight? Just examine. I do not want kingdom, I do not want happiness. Does it therefore follow I will not fight? Does this conclusion follow logically? He had not come to get happiness, he had not come to get kingdom. He had come to set right a wrong. That was the real purpose. He said this is unjust, that we are not getting the portion that we should be getting. It was not necessarily kingdom that he wanted. He wanted unjust meeting out by Duryodhana, in which he says, I will give you nothing. So, even if you don't want kingdom, even if you don't want happiness, it's not for the sake of happiness that he had come for this fight. Now he says, I don't want kingdom, I don't want happiness, therefore I will not. Now you see the confusion in it. Then he says, continue the argument. How can I kill my teacher? How can I kill my grandfather, Bhishma and Drona, Ishubhi, with arrows, how can I tear them apart? So he is prepared to tear apart others, but how can he do it as far as his grandfather and his teacher are concerned? Why? Because they are mamakaha, they are mine. Apart from Bhishma and Drona, there are many others who are my brethren. And if they are killed, how shall I enjoy? Now he said, I don't want happiness. But now he says that I would, even if I have enjoyment, so he grants that I want enjoyment. But how can I enjoy it if by killing them and that to my grandfather and my teacher, the people by sitting with whom, by sharing with whom you enjoy, if they are gone, where is the enjoyment? But he had not come for enjoyment. So the argument, what is the argument? And he has already said, Sukham Rakankshe, I don't want happiness. Then where is the ground for this argument? This is another aspect of confusion. Then he says, that if I fight, there will be a tremendous destruction. He doesn't say one of the possibilities is that there will be a tremendous destruction.
Yes, you could.
He knows it will be tremendous destruction. Then he knows the consequence of that destruction, that there will be Kula Dharma Nasha. He knows it. He doesn't examine, he doesn't ask a question, will it be so? He does not say that If I fight and I win, there will be establishment of justice. You have to compare with that establishment of justice with the possibility of Kula Dharma Nasha. Does not compare. There is a confusion. There is a hurried argument. In a confusion, all the statements have some truth behind them. That is why confusion is so attractive. People try to hug to the confusion. And then he says that one who is cause of Kula Dharma Nasha, it is Shushruma, we have heard. Now he brings a kind of a statement from Shruti, from the Veda, that if you do this, we go to the heaven. Which he doesn't want. Why? Because he wants Sukha. Which he said in the beginning, I don't consciously Sukha. But now he does not want hell because it is not Sukha. And I want a Sukha. Therefore I will not fight. You will see that confusion and contradiction in the whole argument. That is why Sri Krishna at a certain time will say that if you go by Shruti, there are so many interpretations of Shruti that you will be bewildered and you will remain in confusion. I am giving you the path, the knowledge of which will deliver you from what you have heard and what you have not heard. So you go beyond Shruti, go to the truth itself directly. This is a tremendous statement of Sri Krishna, like a revolutionary. Where Shruti is supposed to be such a great pramana, and you should always obey Shruti. Even Bhagavan Sri Krishna's words are now regarded as Shruti. But he himself says, you go beyond all that is heard and that is not heard. Because the truth is not contained in any Shruti. However wide is a Shruti, the truth is greater than Shruti. It can capture only one part. The truth is so vast, so wide. There is no scripture in the world which can claim, I have now the final word. Everything is contained in it. This has been the trouble with the world. All Shrutis are presented as the final revelations, once for all complete, A, B, C, D up to Z. Everything is included in it. And Sri Krishna, a revolutionary, he says, you go beyond that which is heard and that which is not heard. I am giving you the path by which Shruti will be only like a well in a place where there is flood. So what is the use of a Shruti which is like a well where I give you the flood? This yogic knowledge is the knowledge of the flood. Go straight to the truth. And if you don't go to the truth directly, if you do not know how to go, first learn to be equal. This is the starting point. First absolutely become equal-minded. And the minimum is endure. Then become a sage. And then resign. These are the steps I am giving you as to how you can go beyond all Shrutis. Become completely, when your Siddha Pragya, when your consciousness becomes Siddha, that will be the sign. And action will proceed automatically, then after you not even ask the question whether I should do this or not. In this state of consciousness, action will proceed automatically and that will be the right action. It will neither be Satkrita nor Dushkrita, it will be the right action. Neither good action nor bad action, it will be the right action. This is the knowledge I am giving you. So that is confusion. Alright?